Today's August 2nd, 2026. Current Bitcoin price is $63,017.
Welcome to the BitByte podcast, your source for news and information about Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency space. This podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only, and is not financial advice.
Well, this is going to be kind of weird. This is our 200th episode, and we plan on wanting to do something kind of special, but I think breaking news is going to have to change all that. So how are you doing today, Rick?
I'm doing all right. Doing a lot better than some other cold card users.
So, and I guess I was kind of out of the loop for a couple of days, and you, I think, were you trying, when you tried to call me yesterday morning, is that what you were going to call me about at that time?
That was what I was calling about.
Okay. It was crazy. I was like, okay, he's calling. I was like, I was in the middle of some stuff that couldn't really answer the phone. But, tell me your story. Like what happened and how did you feel like when you were starting to see what was going on?
Oh, I just was like starting to freak out because, you know, I was kind of out of the loop the past couple of days. I was so busy with work, you know, and then, you know, play music sometimes, and I was playing Friday night. So Friday night was long. I wake up kind of sore and tired, and then I see this stuff with cold card, and I was going, what the hell's happening?
Yeah.
I see it getting compromised, and yeah, it kind of freaked me out.
Initial thoughts, did you think it was something like broader across all wallets, or what?
Yeah, at first I was like, I was worried that it was affecting every wallet, you know?
Yeah.
Potentially any wallet. But the more you drill it down, it's like CloudKite and cold card. It was really the... Is that the name of the company? You know, we didn't even verify the company that puts out the cold cards, but yeah, they really, really screwed over their customers.
Yeah. CoinKite.
CoinKite, that's what it was. CoinKite.
It's a Canadian Bitcoin hardware company that was founded in 2012. Man, and it was... You know what I think, and I know we're going to dive into this a little bit more to kind of give everybody a little bit more of a detail of what happened. But I think the hard thing about this, and this isn't like when you look at Mt. Gox, like that was negligence, right? That hack that took place, the people that purchased cold card and trusted the hardware wallet, which I mean you should be able to do. They did everything right.
Explain a little bit about cold card versus other wallets. You know, you can buy wallets from multiple different vendors. Like, you know, really popular ones are Ledger and Trezor. And cold card was somewhat popular too.
Yeah. Well, and cold card was seen really, I remember cold card, and this, I'm going to give you kind of my observation of what they were, is that it was kind of a grassroots effort. And this is my interpretation, and people can disagree with me, whatever, but it was a grassroots effort to secure Bitcoin. And it felt like it was the little guy going against like the bigger companies like Trezor and Ledger and stuff like that. But they had the customer in mind, and they were going to do the right things for everybody. And, you know, it was a little bit more of a cost effective way of doing it. There was a lot of different things about the cold card that seemed more grassroots and, more like, we're Bitcoiners too, you know, or at least crypto fans. That was my, I guess, my perception of them.
Well, that's probably how they promoted themselves, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to do like real quick. We're going to go through a bunch of different things on this, but we're going to start from the beginning of the cold card hack itself. So the big thing here is, the way that these things are supposed to work is they're supposed to protect your money using super strong number called a seed phrase, for those of you that may not be aware. And like we were saying, like CoinKite, the company itself was founded back in 2012. And there was an update that went from 2021 to mid-2026 where they had their backup random number generator, which is supposed to create your free seed phrase. It was broken. So for 5 years, they had a broken random number generator. Instead of making seeds with huge randomness, the cold cards were seeded with only like 40 to 72 bit encryption, which was way too small. So they didn't break the cold card. They simply guessed the weak seeds with that.
Well, that just shows that computer chips, I mean, you have to do... I remember back in the day, I'm not like some computer science major, but I remember back in, you know, the early 2000s, I was looking into this stuff. And computers actually didn't really create random numbers.
Yeah.
Like, there was something about the thing. Like, if you knew how the processor worked, you would actually know what numbers it was going to come up with next.
Yeah.
And we've gotten past that, or we're supposed to have gotten past that, but whatever cold card was doing on their end, they were not actually getting truly random numbers.
Right, yeah. And from what I understand, there was something within the security... And I'm going to, exactly, I'm not by any means a computer whiz or anything. Well, I wouldn't say computer whiz, but I'm not a coder. But from what I understand is that there was a true false statement going on in the beginning where they basically had a library of numbers for their random number generation. And it would ask a statement in the beginning that was true or false saying, you know, is this already a random generated number? And it would say yes, and then it would go to that library rather than actually creating true random numbers. Does that make sense? Where they actually had a library of the numbers that they were going to use as their seed phrases, basically, that existed already, rather than actually generating them on the fly.
That's how I understand it.
So it's like if your hardware wallet is supposed to be your home, you're supposed to be locked down with a giant steel door. And cold card, unfortunately, gave everybody cardboard doors. That actually went with that. Now, you could do things to improve the security of it. Like, because I guess there's some people that would actually roll dice to help generate the numbers to give it better entropy. And I don't understand the entropy aspect of it. Do you understand that at all?
Well, I know entropy as far as... thermodynamics. I think what they're probably talking about is this, like, things getting scattered and more spread out.
Yeah.
No, that's entropy is getting spread out. That's. You know, I need to look that up. What they're referring to that within, you know.
Within the random number generation. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how that works within the two, because I've heard that a lot. Now, from what I understand, the way that it's supposed to work is that your random number generation, the way that the seed phrases are supposed to work is that if a computer was going to guess it, the universe would suffer heat death before they would be able to guess your seed phrase, because there's so many different possibilities.
Okay.
Okay. Now, apparently, that cold card didn't go that route. That's why it was so severe.
Well, they bypassed that route. They're just like, we'll do the easy thing.
Yeah, yeah, they didn't do the true generation.
Instead of making a true random thing, we're just going to give them something from our library and call it good.
Mm-hmm.
Which, at that point, that's not even... I mean, that's what I've said. You know, Mt. Gox, we were talking about that earlier. That was... incompetence to the max.
Yeah.
This level of betrayal feels like malice. It doesn't feel like incompetence to me.
Yeah. And so far right now, we're looking at 1,196 Bitcoin addresses that have been drained. 1,083 Bitcoin stolen, which is about 70 million. And the attack actually was completed in about 41 minutes. That's like, that is huge. Huge, huge, huge. People have lost their life savings. And it's unfortunate to see, because like I said, what I was saying, you know, kind of going into that was that the people that bought the cold card they were doing what you should do if you're going into self-custody, what we've talked about.
Yeah.
They trust a company that didn't. How do you put it? I don't know. Negligent. It's not. It's something else, man. I don't know.
No, I think this is beyond negligence. And you know, and you just talk about the warm and fuzzy feelings that you were talking about with this company coming up, and they were supposed to, you know, fight against the big coin cards and stuff like that. It's like, well, yeah, that a lot of people got suckered, and you know, they've lost access to their life savings potentially.
Yeah. And I think one of the things to say, like, if you haven't heard about this and you just happen to listen to our podcast and not listen to so many others out there, or if you're not tuned into X or anything like that, you probably need to stop listening to us right now and actually go move your funds if they're there. And I pray to God that they are. But get
if
them.
If you have a cold card.
Yeah. If you have a cold card. And get them moved to something else, whether, and I don't care if you move it onto Coinbase at that point. In the meantime, whatever the case may be, you just need to get it off of that cold card. So really, I mean, cold card was supposed to use a backup, or they used a backup random number generator called, and I'm probably going to say this wrong, but it's called Yasmarang. And Yasmarang is not truly random. It produced patterns, not chaos. And that's where it goes back into that library. If the randomness is predictable, the seeds became predictable too. And they're able to just go back through and sweep everything. I think they initially did it where some users actually had some of their coins taken, but not everything. Like they were doing just smaller amounts at first. But then they did it once they saw that it was successful. They started doing giant sweeps.
Yeah. Then they would look at what's in the wallet and then pull basically everything out.
Yep. If you had, so say for example, you had a cold card, and since then you've migrated over to a Trezor or anything like that. If you're still using your original seed phrase that was generated from the cold card and you moved it over to like a Ledger or a Trezor or an Alipal, those wallets can also be compromised. Because you're using that original seed phrase.
Yep.
So that's something to watch out for too. So if you are in that boat, move your Bitcoin immediately, move your crypto immediately, create a new seed phrase. Don't use the old address, like get everything off there that you can. And I pray to God that your funds are still there and that they're safe. But there's been a lot of people that they're able to do it so quickly. Like it's a matter of time is of the essence in this event.
Yes.
And what were you saying? So there were some things that you were looking at, like what were some of the recommendations that you saw out there yesterday?
Well, I was seeing people saying, hey, if you have a cold card, create a hot wallet on your computer and put it on there. I mean, that's not long-term safe, but at least get it off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I guess you could do it on your phone.
Do it on your phone, on your computer, wherever you can put a hot wallet. But cold storage is usually the places to go. But if you have a cold card for your cold storage, it's not safe.
Yeah. Yeah. Get a new hardware wallet. That's probably, and you can go to Best Buy if you have one local, and they should have hardware wallets there. I know they carry Ledgers and Trezors there. I don't know if they have anything else at Best Buy, but I know they have those too. I mean, those are options that you have out there. You can get multi-sig set up, which I still don't know how I feel about multi-sig. But then you could use, like you said, use your computer, use a hardware wallet there. I don't care if you use PayPal, because PayPal will accept crypto right now too. You could transfer it into PayPal for the moment.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different things that you can do. And change brands, and maybe get multiples of brands. Like, I hate to say that, and I know we've talked about that before, is that spread the wealth out. Like, move it across a few different things. That way, if one gets breached, not all of them are breached.
Yeah. You know, that's actually something that brought to light from this issue is like, hey, you know, if you're a diehard loyalist to one brand, like imagine if you were a cold card loyalist and you had multiple wallets. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you were just like on some crazy, you know, vacation or whatever during this time, and then you come back, you have multiple cards and they're all empty. So maybe having, you know, being loyal to Ledger or Trezor or something like that is not the way to go.
No, it's not. And I know like Ledger's caught a lot of flack. We've talked about this in the past because they've had the customer breach information where it was credit cards, home addresses, that type of information that was out there. And they were afraid that that was going to open people up to wrench and tax and those types of things. And then Ledger's caught a lot of flack because they're not completely open source. They're somewhat closed source in a lot of things, but we're kind of I wanted to kind of go through what open source and closed source kind of really means to folks. So if you're thinking about it, you're in school, right? And you've got what they would call open source. That means everyone can check your homework. The code is public. Anyone can inspect it. Typically mistakes get caught faster. Now, here's the catch though, is that because it's open source, people, white hack actors, those types of things, they will go in, they'll audit the code. If they find an exploit, they'll report it back. Hopefully it gets patched pretty quickly, right?
Right.
But the problem is if you're a bad actor, you find an exploit, you don't report it, then you just take advantage of it.
You take advantage of that exploit. And that's the thing with open source, you're putting it out to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Good, bad, you know, the white hats and the black hats and everyone in between.
Yeah.
So if the black hats find something, they're going to exploit it.
Exactly.
And, scammers, I mean, just think about it. Whoever figured this out, they've made, $70 million they've stolen $70 million worth of Bitcoin in 40 minutes?
Yeah.
That's a lot. Crazy.
And it's out there now. Like, I mean, and it may have been, I think some of the early reports that I saw said that whoever was initially doing it looked like they were kind of amateurs. However, once that now that is out there in the wild, every person that's looking to exploit is going to exploit. From what I understand too, there's even been some white hats that have gone through and has started wiping wallets just to hopefully get the money back to the people before the black hats could get it all.
Yeah, that's what I would say.
So closed source, on the other hand, is only the teacher sees the homework. So the code is private. You trust the company to catch the mistakes, which is still not always the best thing. Fewer eyes equals higher chance of something slips through. So I think what the thing to remember here, and we've talked about this before, there's always some level of trust, whether you're using Coinbase, Ledger, Trezor, Elipal, Cold Card, obviously. Open source does not automatically equal safe, and closed source doesn't automatically equal unsafe. But typically, like if it's open source, typically the reason why it's looked at as better is because there's more people checking. But in this case, it didn't appear that it worked. Now, there is some companies that use a third-party auditor on top of their internal reviews, you know, especially for some of those that are open source and closed source. The auditors, they check the code, they test randomness, they try to break devices, they look for security holes, and then they report problems before hackers find them. So they're like referees making sure that the game is fair for everybody whenever you've got those third-party auditors in play. So now I want to go over some companies that actually use third-party auditors and whether they're open source or closed source. And third-party auditing, I think it's a good thing. I mean, they're getting paid to test these things, right? And it doesn't matter. You can still be an open source company and still have a third-party auditor that you're paying to test your code.
Yeah. No, I think, assuming that you're hiring a competent person to audit you, I think that's the way to go.
Yeah, I agree. So SeedSigner, they're open source. Completely open source, and they have a community-driven review. Keystone, which is one of the newer ones out there, and that's the one from Jack Dorsey, I believe. They've got external audits, and they have open firmware. Blockstream from Jade, they're open source, so they have open firmware, and then they have independent researchers that review it. Foundation Passport, which I'm not familiar with them at all, but they're open source. They're fully open source, and they encourage independent review. Bitbox O2, They're open source, audited by Kuldesky Security, transparent firmware and app. Trezor is open source, fully open source. They do have a third-party auditor called Radical Open Security that are always checking their devices. And then the community is constantly reviewing the code. And then, of course, everybody's favorite to hate is Ledger. They use multiple external auditors. Secure element chips are certified under common criteria, EAL5+, and they have a strong hardware security focus. So those are some of the options out there that are either open source or closed source, but they do have some sort of third-party auditing that is taking place. And the reason why some of these wallets are, the other wallets so far are safe, is they're using different chips, different random systems, and different firmware. And again, they use auditors to check their code. So one of the other pluses is those ones that we just talked about, they don't use Coldcard's broken backup random number generator. Just to hopefully give you some tummy comfort on that sense. So that's a lot to take in.
Yeah.
What else would you add to something like that?
Nothing else. Nothing we've said already. I mean, we're still kind of figuring out what's going on, because I think something news on this broke Friday morning, and it's a lot of interesting things. It got me to know about different things within Bitcoin Knots versus Bitcoin Core. I don't want to get into it too much because I'm still processing, you know, how some of this affects it, but it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely, and it's scary, man. Like I said, I think the thing that kills me is the people that bought the cold card. I mean, given they probably didn't, it's so hard to know everything about this without being, you know, a cryptographer or some sort of a computer scientist or anything like that, but they were trying to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And CoinKite just really, I don't know, man.
Just screwed them over.
I mean, and I go back to saying, like, what do you think this will do to self-custody? Do you think this will blow up, become a huger thing? Do you think, like, there's going to be regulations on self-custody? Like, what do you think this is, what's going to happen? It's like, is your grandpa going to be like, well, your hardware wallet is now no longer safe? Like, people don't, what are the implications long lasting?
Well, I don't know. I think the implications right now are more within the Bitcoin community.
Yeah.
Granted, I think there are going to be some outsiders who just heard that cold cards don't work and they just think that cold storage is gone or is, basically useless, and maybe that scares them away. I don't know. That maybe that's something we'll see. But yeah, of course, government will try and use this as some type of action to maybe regulate cold cards and stuff like that for our protection. You never know.
Yeah, and I think
cold cards, but hardware wallets.
Hardware wallets. Well, and I was going to say, I think. People are going to misinterpret cold card as hardware wallets in general, possibly, and just think of it as cold storage, and they may confuse that, and they may think that all of those hardware wallets are broken, right?
Right.
Especially to people from the outside. So they're like, oh, well, they've all gotten hacked. No, that's not how it worked. Cold card accidentally made weak secret numbers. Hackers guessed them and stole Bitcoin. Other hardware wallets so far, and every hardware wallet has come out and made a statement about this. They use different chips, different randomness systems, and have open source code or outside auditors. It's not a Bitcoin problem. It wasn't the Bitcoin code that was hacked. It was cold card really just dropping the ball. Yeah. Scary times. Yeah, you know what's crazy too is like that CoinKite, like even the OpenDime, I don't know if you've seen those at all. Like I had thought about buying some and giving them out to people, like because they were supposed to just be like little microtransactions of Bitcoin that you give. And I would thought about giving some to nephews and nieces, kind of a cool looking thing. But man, all those things are probably wiped.
Yeah.
And that was all, I mean, because they made quite a few different things. They had the cold card, they had the open dime, they had the block clock, sats card, tap signer, sats chip.
Man, yeah. You know, I wasn't as familiar with cold card before this. I mean, I knew of them. And I remember looking at their wallets and I was like, oh, that looks kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I can see like a lot of Bitcoin enthusiasts like yourselves trying to, you know, help out maybe your kids or nephews and nieces and that type of thing, getting them something like that. your work is basically blew up in your face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I completely agree with you. Like everything about them seemed like they were the grassroots. They were the cypherpunks that were developing this stuff for you and trying to give it to the man. I mean, everything looked really kind of raw. Like if you look at any of their devices, they were always kind of clear. You could see the components inside. It looked kind of
plastic.
Mm-hmm. Looked homemade kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. We kind of went through cold card a lot there. Now we kind of wanted to jump back over to kind of our typical format. And I do want to say I do apologize to anybody out there that got affected by this. If you're listening, our heart goes out to you.
Yep.
How are theoreticals looking?
Our theoreticals are doing all right. Assuming we didn't store them on a cold card, they
too soon.
First theoretical purchase back in October 2023, $3,000 could have got you 0.0885 Bitcoin, and that $3,000 investment is now worth $5,577. So it's a little bit down from last week, about $200 down. Second theoretical purchase right at the halving, the most recent halving in 2019, and or not 2019, April 19th, 2024. Sorry. That's wrong year, Gus. Scrambled in my brain. So $1,000 could have bought you 0.01564 Bitcoin, and that $1,000 investment is down $14 to $986. Oof. So not below treading water anymore.
Nope. We are now below water again. Almost exactly where we were.
Yeah. Well, I think that purchase, the Bitcoin price of Bitcoin was exactly $64,000.
Yeah.
So if you're below 64, you're underwater. So, and we're at 63.17.
Yeah. And one of the first things I asked you whenever you called and told me about this is like, what's the price of Bitcoin doing? And that's where I was just like, because if it was all hardware wallets that had been breached, I think the price would have completely tanked.
Oh, man. That would have been the end of the world. No, we'd seen 65 earlier and it was down in the 63 range. So that's not bad. That's a normal Bitcoin day, you know, gain a couple here, lose a couple there, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're still exactly where we were. We've been trading sideways. Like it's been this way now for pretty much all of 2026.
Yep. Well, I think that's going to be the path of 2026. It's going to basically through the end of, especially since the high in October, I mean, it's going to take about a year to find a true low.
Yeah.
I think. And so I would expect sometime third or fourth quarter. Well, we're in the third quarter now.
Yep.
We've been in the third quarter, but somewhere in the around the fourth quarter, we're probably going to have the final shakeout low. Maybe that's when all the rest of the wallets get compromised. I don't know.
And that's what the other thing I was going to add. I will say this, like if the price was tanking, not only would it have been all the other hardware wallets got attacked, but that means that there probably was a catastrophic breach in the Bitcoin code itself. So that would be like something completely different. Like if that happened, then yeah, all bets are off. Like everybody would be moving.
Well, I think, I kind of touched on it earlier, but there's that Bitcoin knots, you know, version that nodes are running versus the Bitcoin core.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like there is going to be a fork on that, because there is, I mean, there's basically two factions within the Bitcoin community that are separating.
Yeah, there's supposed to be a fork coming, right? Is it this week or?
I don't know exactly when it's supposed to happen, but it's going to happen soon. So, I mean, there's always something new to research with Bitcoin. There's always new developments, new, you know, new issues like this week. So, I don't know. Things are going to get interesting, I think.
So there's, it looks like, and I'm just pulling this up right now because you were talking about this, BIP110, a soft fork. So it's technically a soft fork because it's still going to be backwards compatible, but it's supposed to reduce data embedding into Bitcoin transactions to address issues with ordinals, inscriptions, and BRC20 style tokens. And that's where you're talking about the difference between knots and core, right?
Yes.
New script pug keys are greater than 34 bits. Data pushes to witness items greater than 256 bytes invalid. Blocks with undefined witness tapleaf versions blocked. I'm not going to pretend like I know what that means at all. Taproot I've heard about, but I don't know exactly what it means. Oversized control blocks and certain tap script opcodes restricted. So basically, you're probably not going to be able to contain the information if it's over a certain amount of size, because you can include all kinds of different stuff in a block, right? Uses a modified BIP9 deployment with a 55% miner signaling threshold. Don't know what that exactly means. Miner signaling threshold. What were you going to say? You were about to say something.
Nah, it's all right.
Duration specified at about 1 year, then auto expires. If adoption is incomplete, it could cause a split, but is designed to be temporary.
I don't know. The way things are going, I think it's eventually going to be a hard fork.
Yeah.
They're diverging quite a bit on what they want in the thing. And that kind of goes back to, we talked about this actually sometime, I think it was a year ago, but we talked about Bitcoin Core and how they were expanding the what could you do? Like, you know, how much memory could be devoted to messages and whatnot in the transactions.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were concerned if you could start putting in JPEGs, then basically people could put in, you know, some terrible things as part of their transaction, especially if it's, you know, some type of CSAM.
Yeah.
You know, try not to say anything explicit on here, but child exploitation. But if you were put that on top of your transaction, then basically every node is carrying that material on it. In perpetuity.
Yeah. If you're carrying a backup of that, then that means you are basically in custody of it. Yeah. So it's crazy. So key differences, there's another one coming up too, which is the eCash hard fork. This one would actually be a hard fork. So it's not backwards compatible. It's supposed to be targeted at block 964,000. Which right now they're projecting that to be a launch window of August 21st, 2026. And basically what this one does is it creates a new layer one blockchain copying Bitcoin's history with the same SHA-256D mining algorithm as Bitcoin. Difficulty reset to minimum at launch to attract hash power. Drive chain style side chains for expansion. Asset transfer, one eCash for every one Bitcoin at the split. BTC balance remains unchanged and are governed by Bitcoin software and private keys. Requires consensus for miners, wallets, exchanges, and custodians to create eCash as a real asset. Replay rules, custody support, and liquidity are unresolved before launch. Potential to market confusion due to similar names. And that's always where it gets hard, where if they want to hard fork it, that's how you got like Bitcoin Cash and then Bitcoin Cash Satoshi's Vision. They did a hard fork, switched it over, and all of a sudden, you know, which one do you follow? Which one's the true Bitcoin at that point? And when you call it a different name, I think that's kind of a non-starter for a lot of people.
Right.
So I think the soft fork, I'm guessing, probably would be the way to go. But
yeah.
Yeah. Because it sounds like somebody's just spinning off a new form whenever they do like a hard fork like that. But I mean, you can always cash in whatever you got from your hard fork and move it back over into the main chain, whichever one wins out. So,
yeah.
Crazy times, crazy times. Yeah, that's kind of interesting. I hadn't, I guess I hadn't been up on some of those forks lately. I didn't know those were coming up as soon as they were. And then last thing about the Clarity Act, I was checking on it before. I was hoping that we were moving closer to finalization. I had seen something on X that they had the votes, but Polymarkets is only giving it a 29% chance of passing right now. So maybe that's not accurate.
I was going to say, yeah, because it's gone down since last week. So,
yeah. Indeed, indeed. That's really all I had. I mean, I think the big push for getting this episode out, and probably for as long-winded as we've been on this, has just been to maybe give some folks some tummy comfort. If you have anything, you know, with a hardware wallet, and then for folks that may have a cold card, man, get that stuff moved. If it's still sitting there, get it moved as quickly as possible. If you still have time, they're saying that by the end of the weekend, like everything, all those wallets will be drained if they have the vulnerability. So,
yeah, it's only a matter of time now that everyone has access to it.
Yeah.
This information.
Yeah. And from what I understand, that with having AI makes it that much easier. Like if you have a jailbroken AI, you can just have it implement the code and do it. Now, the other question, I'm going to ask you one other thing. I know it seems like we're wrapping up, but I want to ask you one other thing. Because of the amount of eyes on this type of a breach, do you think that Bitcoin will be spendable?
I don't know. That's a good question.
That's the crazy thing. Like that, we go back to a question of freedom, right? Like, I know there were different discussions in the past. About, you know, like they could roll back, they could basically say, well, this, you can't spend this Bitcoin because we've marked it as whatever, hacked, stolen, whatever the case may be. But you can't really do that. Like, I mean, then all of a sudden you're censoring Bitcoin, which you're not supposed to be able to do with Bitcoin.
No. Well, and I think that's, I mean, yeah, we want to protect some people, and we don't want to exactly reward hackers for doing this kind of stuff. But if they can censor Bitcoin, then that basically defeats the whole point of it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's, you've almost got to take the bad with the good. I mean, and I hate to say that, and it sounds insensitive, but just because somebody hits you with a car doesn't mean like all cars should be outlawed.
Yeah. That's pretty crazy. It's a crazy thought, but at the end of the day, I mean, I think the world is served by having Bitcoin in place, warts and all.
Yeah.
Versus something that's basically nerfed and neutered.
Yeah. Yep. No, I completely agree. And I think that's one of the big reasons why I think we both have believed in Bitcoin is because of that. I always go back to transferring money between a bank and transferring money with Bitcoin, or, you know, transferring Bitcoin to wallets is when I transfer money from my bank to another bank, it's approved. And when I transfer money like Bitcoin wise to you, it's confirmed. It's not approved. It's just, okay, yeah, it happened. I didn't have to seek anybody's response, you know, anybody's approval for it.
Yep.
So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Well, all I'll say is last thoughts on anybody who did lose Bitcoin. Just take comfort as best you can. I mean, the greatest gift we have is life, and that's not something you want to end things over.
No.
By any means.
For sure.
You know, there's a way to recover from this. And, I don't know. I'm pretty sure somebody's going to think of something to help people out. And I don't know. But we need to figure out who did this, and I think they should be punished accordingly.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think in some way, Cold Card or Coin Kite, they need to be held responsible.
Absolutely.
And I don't know. I mean, it's unfortunate to see, and I think, you know, they were... Yeah, if they've made any type of money at all, like, I think they need to do the right thing and give it back to those that were affected, and probably shut their doors. I don't know. I wouldn't trust them ever again. But, and I agree what you're saying. I think go touch grass, be with your family, be with your friends. You've stacked stats before; you can do it again. So, yeah, on that note, thank y'all for listening.
Bye.
Bye.